Welcome everyone to the X Factor Files podcast. I'm Daryl.
I'm Philip.
And we are here with another Rule of Three episode. Today we are welcoming Chad from Gray Malkin Lane. Chad, how are you?
Hi, I'm so good. I get to hang out with my friends this morning. How are you
guys? Yeah, it's Saturday morning. We are reviewing something called Marvel Superheroes, which are just their seasonal specials from the early 90s. So it feels very Saturday morning, like I should have some cereal or something while we're doing this.
Oh, absolutely. There's like multiple stories per issue. They each have their own theme song. They each have their own sugary, crunchy cereal.
And when I got your list and I was reviewing everything, I did it on an online website. And because some of these are on Marvel Unlimited, the issues we're reviewing today are not. And I was looking and I'm like, I swear I have some of these in a short box somewhere. I know I have some of the seasonal specials. I'm not sure if I have these, but I know that these ones probably sold like hotcakes because you had X-Men prominently featured in the early 90s on the covers.
Yep. It's a big X-Men story too.
It is. So we're reviewing Marvel Superheroes 6, 7, and 8. So it takes us from summer to fall to winter, I believe.
Of 1991.
Yeah, 91 into 92 technically for the last one, but it would have been published and come out in 91. So that's a huge year for X-Men. And the
Was it a huge year for you? What were you doing in 1991?
I was in sixth grade. That was a bad year.
I would say that it was an interesting year for us. We would have been that fall of 91 going into kindergarten. So
I had already worked out how to go to school and then how to get to my grandparents in the other corner of school. So that was in my prime, like opening the back gate, taking off with my tricycle, hitting up all the nice old folks in the neighborhood for stuff.
Sixth grade's a rough year. I think for both of my children, sixth grade has been their hardest year academically and socially. And it certainly was that for me. That was an awkward, awful year.
Yeah. Was that the beginning of middle school for you? Because I know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Things have changed. So
when I really realized I was gay and like started getting teased about it, but also hated myself for it, like that was that year.
But I think that middle school in general is hard. I mean, you and your daytime profession know that too. Even the trauma inflicted years on like middle school is rough for me too. And it was such a weird dynamic change. Like that's when you start realizing that there's a social structure as well. Like elementary school, you kind of just vibe with your friends. Like there's no set social structure. You just have people you talk to more or play with more on the playground. And I think the stratification of everything really comes out in middle school. Like that's when you start getting groups and cliques and like the labels that people apply to you, like you just said, or that you apply to yourself. That's where more development comes along. It just sucks. Like there are so many hormones and
yeah, but upon reflection, that was the year I also like really learned if I'm going to be happy, I got to do it on my own terms. Like I made friends on my own terms. I pursued my own interests. I think that's like where that really set in for me. And that's a core like driver in my personality now.
Nice.
So before we dive into the issues, we've already said it's X-Men, but this really ties into what you're doing this month on your own show, which is Sentinel Month. So these stories will feature Sentinels, and we'll talk more about how this fits into the scheme of things after we review the issues. But give us your elevator pitch for Sentinel Month right now.
Oh my goodness. First of all, this story, I love highlighting stories that a lot of people haven't read. This is an X-Men in the Australian Outback era story with all of the characters involving Sentinels, written by Roy Thomas, and like picking up on some major X-Men plot threads and like resolving some big stories. And it's a story a lot of fans don't know about and they don't even know to look for it. So Sentinels Month on my show, we're spending the entire month reviewing Sentinels comprehensively. So instead of the trial, we're doing a Sentinels 101 episode where we're covering all the major Sentinel stories. But there's also a lot of outliers. There's a lot of odd places where the Sentinels either like have just some random variant of them, like it's the Doombot Sentinel, or like some random story where a Sentinel becomes sentient and just wants to be friends with the X-Men. Like there's a lot of these odd outliers, like the Sentinel that went on a date with Squirrel Girl. So this is one of those stories. And I like to be comprehensive. So covering these little side stories that involve content that's not part of the main thing, but it's still a piece of the picture, that it's really fun to talk this story with you guys for that reason.
Marvel superheroes, like you said, involves several stories in each issue. So in that way, it was like one of their anthology titles. They had several. Marvel Comics Presents is probably the most prominent one that was happening around the same time. But these stories, like these were supersized issues. So everything we're reviewing is one story per issue, but it was still the same size as a regular comic. Like we got 24 pages of story, basically, in each of these issues, which I wasn't expecting. Because the last time I had looked at one of these specials was when I had a bunch of guests on and we did a fundraiser for Peter David.
I did a Hellcat story with you guys for that. I remember.
Yeah. So it's been a hot second since I cracked one of these. And on the cover, this is of issue 6. Sabra is on there.
I don't know her.
I don't know her, but I like her. We get a preview, and just that little bubble on the cover makes me want to read her story, too.
Sabra's complicated. Sabra is a Jewish woman in Israel who identifies with pro-Zionist forces. And in an era of Gaza, that's a particularly tricky conversation. She's a character I've considered covering on my Patreon, but it would have to be just the right person because she's a complex. The word Sabra has like connotations of like a person who was like born in Jerusalem or Israel, like a someone pure. It's a complicated character, but she is very cool. She is very cool.
Speedball that you love.
Speedball was a feature of Marvel superheroes. I think almost every single issue of Marvel superheroes had a Speedball story in it, because he was sort of a big deal.
I mean, he sort of fits the 90s vibes, like with this art and with the
his effect. Yeah.
And Speedball is the Jubilee of the New Warriors.
Yes, and this was when Nicieza was. Had he begun his run on New Warriors yet or no?
Right around this time. I feel like that started in 93.
Okay. Because Speedball had a miniseries, he had 10 issues. I just found the final two I needed for that this past week on clearance at Half Price Books for 50 cents an issue. So
Nicieza started on New Warriors in 1990. So he was writing it at this time.
Okay. So this is sort of drawing in the New Warriors fans, like giving more supplementary material.
Like Mrs. Godfrey.
Yes. Chandler from X Reads loves Speedball. Oh. And Power Pack is on the cover because Power Pack was a big thing back then, too. They just had a miniseries, issue 5 might still be forthcoming.
And there's a horse in this group.
Yes, there is. I looked at the group shot. I'm like, this is not the Power Pack that I recognized from my light reading of them.
I recognized that it was Power Pack, which I'm very proud of, although I was confused by the horse with the like emo side bang happening with its mane. Also, full disclosure, it's been a busy week, so I mostly got through everything, and I skipped the side stories, so I'm sorry.
Oh, it's fine.
The group shot of the X-Men here is Colossus, Storm, Havoc, Rogue, Wolverine. And if you notice, Psylocke is miscolored like the Scarlet Witch here. And then there's the Abomination down front. It's an Abomination X-Men team up.
Yes, I got Scarlet Witch vibes a lot from Psylocke this issue. Like, it's all pink and red rather than like pink and lavender. I feel like Demanda Martini would have some thoughts about like
how Betsy's looking here.
Yes.
Yeah. I just want to say this is the hottest Colossus era. Outback Colossus is hottest Colossus. We'll talk about the art in issue 8 when we get to it, but that is a fucking hot Colossus.
I have not read Outback or X-Men before. Like, there were a few issues when I tried to read like the prelude to Inferno and then
Which
sort
is,
of dropped it like it was infernally hot.
yeah, so I have an omnibus that you can crack into for that. It's also,
I was gonna say a hot colossus sounds like a deep fried chili dog from the fair or something. Like, we gotta go get a hot colossus.
I mean, if that doesn't appear in the listing of new foods at the Minnesota State Fair, then someone missed an opportunity.
For everyone who's not familiar, the State Fair is a big thing. We've talked about it lightly on our show.
The Minnesota State Fair is the best state fair. It ranks highest in the country. Daryl hates it, even
It's a
though.
fair. That's because I worked at it as a teenager. That changes your perception of something.
And yet you still volunteer to work at it with your
I
job.
don't love a fair.
But it's such a big thing that during COVID, they started this thing where it's like certain food vendors will have things set up and you can go through and visit it.
Yeah, it was
And
like a driving thing, so you could still get all the foods that you
while
love.
wearing a mask, and they just shove food in your car window. But now they do a fair preview every Memorial Day weekend now, and it's too much.
And
Like,
some food doesn't make sense. Like the people who put cotton candy on top of ice cream and called it a thing. Like, where's that cotton candy gonna go? It's just gonna dissolve.
it is.
Or the people who like deep fry like Kool-Aid.
And you're like,
I would try that.
oh.
A deep fried Oreo. I've had deep fried Oreos. I've deep fried Three Musketeers are amazing. There's always the cheese curds. I feel like Scotch eggs are also deep fried. There's a really good coffee place, so you can go right get your coffee, and then like the next corner down is the mini donuts with that really fun machine where it plops them on the little river of hot oil.
I
Little
don't
pot, little
remember.
flip them over.
How we got to county fairs.
Sorry.
The Hawk Colossus, the Hawk
Oh yeah,
Colossus.
that's where it came from. I'm so sorry.
So I want to talk about just shortly, and I want to pick your brain on this. Like you said, this is Outback era X-Men when they were not in the Outback anymore. And you have Roy Thomas. This is a return for you to Roy Thomas's writing after a little while not having any Roy Thomas content.
Yeah,
So
I mean, Roy Thomas and Roy and Dan are both consultants on this. There's one issue not written by them, but they were writing like Avengers West Coast
they
and
were.
Thor, I think. They were doing a lot in the early 90s, actually.
I think they did. I'm trying to think the issue breakdown. They may have been the longest tenured writers on Avengers West Coast. Like Byrne was there. Everyone loves to talk about Byrne and Byrne's run. And Byrne's run on Avengers West Coast was like 8 issues, because he got pissed and quit, which is sort of a theme with John Byrne.
And the Thomases did that story where like the world's greatest murderers like got supervillain bodies. Like Mao Zedong is here, and suddenly, who's the girl that hacked up her parents? Lizzie
Lizzie
Borden
Borden.
is
Lizzie
like in the
Borden was
same group
there.
as these people who murdered like billions and millions.
It's deeply uncomfortable. Stalin is there too, I believe.
No.
Yeah.
I love that Lizzie Borden is the like the fourth person. It cracks me up.
Yes. Like you have like these dictators, and then Lizzie Borden, who may or may not have done it. So from your understanding of this, was this a story that would have been like in a drawer somewhere? And they're like, we're launching Marvel superheroes.
Yeah, you know, a lot of times these books are to commission new talent. Like when you get Marvel Comics Presents, it's almost like let's bring someone in and see if they can handle an 8-page story. It's like Unlimited or in the Infinity Comics nowadays, right? In a story like this, I think it was mostly the stock footage. Marvel has a lot of contracts where if you print a certain number of books, you get to run a certain type of ad and you get like qualifications on paper. So I think sometimes they would just spit extra books out to get the deals. But this was mostly, I think, stories that had been done as fill-ins that never got used. So, like, we have an extra story in a drawer just in case, but it never got printed for some reason. And I think that's a lot of what these stories came from.
And when we get to issue 8, that's the one that's not written by Roy and Dan Thomas. And I think that's where they were like, we have the elements for these 2 issues. We need someone to like write the third part to actually close it out because the Thomases never did.
Yeah.
We never got a conclusion. So why don't we jump into issue 6 right now and talk about the story. So we start off with the Abomination out of nowhere. Like, it's an X-Men story, but you're opening with a big splash of the Abomination sort of tearing it up. And it's somewhat confusing. I'm a little familiar with Abomination. I'm most familiar with him from the She-Hulk TV series.
Okay.
Because Hulk is an area I've not explored yet in Marvel Comics.
The Abomination is Emil Blomsky, Russian agent turned into this creature. There's a lot of different versions of his early origins. But he's the counter to the Hulk in a lot of ways, right? He's like rage personified.
And he eventually gets kidnapped by a Sentinel. That's how we can wrap up sort of the beginning of the story.
It's like a weird, like, mommy, what's a Sentinel? It's quick panel.
From a bystander. And the Sentinel is coming through, it looks like almost a Doctor Strange teleportation circle.
And that circle has relevance. Do you want me to do a continuity dive real quick?
Sure.
In the last appearance of the Sentinels that this takes place after, obviously this is 1991, but this is a reference to a Roy Thomas story, Avengers 102 through 104, which we're literally reviewing on my show this month. If you guys remember back in the old days when Cyclops convinced the Sentinels to fly into the sun because of logic, like the only way to destroy mutation is to destroy the sun. So they go flying into the sun. They brought these characters back later along with Larry Trask in this 3-issue Avengers arc. And because they flew too close to the sun, Sentinel number 2 mutated. And his mutant ability is that he can open portals. The other Sentinels cannot. So now he wants to sterilize Earth, and he's in control of the Sentinels, this mutant AI mind. They capture the Scarlet Witch, and there's a literal line of dialogue that says, "We only need a female mutant to power the machine, and we couldn't find Jean Grey." So they went for the Scarlet Witch.
Wow.
So they went for the, at that time, only other female mutant.
In the end, number 2, the other Sentinels realize he's a mutant, and they destroy him, and then they all fall inert. And the Avengers just leave everything there, apparently. And also, like, the corpse of Larry Trask, they just leave buried in this Sentinel base in Australia. So this portal is a reference to number 2, because he's the one that can open the portals.
Oh, his linear leap. There's some sort of alliteration and name for it, like, commencing linear leap something something.
Yeah, there's a mutant Sentinel, though. That's nuts.
Yeah, it is.
He's all melty. We get, like, that fun... There's a summary of that in the upcoming pages.
Yes.
Which is unexpected. I'm like, I was very confused on how Avengers were fighting Sentinels, especially nowadays, because it seems like they just weren't taking a stand on any sort of Sentinel thing.
That's what we're covering in my show. It's because the Sentinels kidnapped the Scarlet Witch, so now they gotta go save their teammate.
But if it's mutants, then
So in the outback, they're kicking it in their they being the X-Men, kicking it in their outback town, which they had taken from the Reavers, basically. And it's an abandoned town that they actually have really nice quarters. You don't get to see it here, but like they each basically took one of the buildings and made it their own. So Dazzler's is like full of her own merch and posters.
Somewhere in between shows.
Yes. So like she has posters of herself on her wall. It's really fun. But Rogue is reading the newspaper and she's like,
Rogue is my star player in this first issue, at least. She I don't believe it. She says to the others, "The Abomination's been captured by a Sentinel." And Colossus goes, "Are you certain, Rogue?" And she goes, "I can read, Colossus." There's about 12 lines of her in this issue that made me laugh really hard.
There's an inking error when Colossus is reading it, because there are no lines on this newspaper. So maybe he's the one who can't read. So they cook up a plan. I'm truncating this a lot because Roy Thomas loves dialogue.
There's a lot of words.
Ooh. It is Claremontian in the amount of dialogue. in these first two issues. So
it's noteworthy that Longshot and Dazzler are not in these stories. It mentions that they're off doing something, but it's the rest of the Australia X-Men.
I think that's probably because Roy and Dan Thomas forgot that they were part of a team, and they just needed to add that little note in. They're like, oh shit,
they're on a mission.
Yeah, they're somewhere.
Probably some ill-fated romantic getaway somewhere.
Probably.
I love Storm's outfit, though. Like, this might be one of my favorite Storm looks, honestly.
Yeah.
Like, it's not overly sexualized, because that just bothers me. And, like, it just looks so badass.
Yeah. She's in charge.
I dislike this Psylocke costume when it's drawn certain ways. Certain artists do it well, but this Rich Buckler, it's the wonkiest part of this whole issue for me, is the way Psylocke's costume is drawn.
It's like 80s workout video plus Lord of the Rings clips.
Yeah, she is Arwen. She has become Arwen.
But with the terrible workout thong thing on the outside.
Oh yeah, that's a yeast infection waiting to happen. An actual person would not do that to themselves outside of an 80s calisthenics class. The plan they cook up, we have Rogue and Colossus in his human form. They're like, hey, we know someone else in Australia, coincidentally, who's gamma powered, because this is gamma related.
Because it has to be. What else is special about Abomination?
Yes. So they go to Sydney.
Rogue and Colossus go through Gateway's portal, and she says, you know, Petey, that Gateway fella still gives me the willies. I love her so much.
And they're like, oh no, the talk started an hour before the newspaper said it. And
like, what an odd misprint situation.
And we get them going to a Doc Samson lecture.
Are you guys Doc Samson fans?
What?
Are you guys Doc Samson fans?
Yes.
I don't understand what people love about this character. He's the worst.
He seemed helpful to X-Factor.
That
was a good issue where it's like...
Well, right, but he also like sexualized Polaris while he was doing those therapy sessions.
Oh.
People don't remember. This guy's the most misogynistic, awful. He's terrible. May I read part of his speech that he's giving?
Yes, please.
He's talking, Doc Samson, yes, ma'am, guilty as charged. That's the nickname the American press has hung on me. And then he gives his origin story. I guess the term they're groping for is superhero. Then he starts talking about how, like, people manifest their gamma energy based on, like, their subconscious. He's reviewing different people. He references a book, or he references a lecture. My hastily improvised lecture was on Jung versus Freud. Is there really a collective unconscious, or is it all just sex? Then he's talking about like his own manifestation of his powers. And he's like, I guess I've always seen myself as virile and sexy and delicious and like a superhero. So that's why I look like this. I mean, I'm not quoting directly, but that's his speech. He's the worst. I hate this man.
And then he's like, any questions on this topic? And this man in front of Rogue is like, I have a question. And she's like, no, he was pointing at me. I have a question. And Doc Samson's like, no, I was pointing at him. And she's like, well, anyway, and goes forward with her question. And then a sentinel like starts emerging from a portal behind him. And she's like, behind you? And he's just talking like...
He's very into the sound of his own voice.
This is Roy Thomas personified on a page where it's just going on and on and on.
For instance, deep down, I myself had probably always envied superheroes for their physiques. Worst. Portal opens, sentinel hand reaches through and grabs him. This is the running gag in this issue. Just plucked out of the sky.
And gone. He tries punching him and...
But the Sentinel's prepared. He's already adapted for a 25-ton powered punch.
Colossus exposes himself and he's like, it's worth it. And I'm like, this isn't in continuity because they were hidden.
When I used to work on the handbooks, Daryl, we would have to talk about villains with secret plots and how at a certain point you would learn who the villain was. And we would use phrases to say that. You know, then it was revealed that it was Dr. Doom. But there was a running thing in the books where people would say something like, and then Dr. Doom exposed himself. And we got editor notes like, that is not a phrase ever to use in a handbook. You just told us Colossus exposes himself.
I wish. But he goes into his metallic form, even though everyone thinks the X-Men are dead. It's worth it. We have to try. This is a Sentinel. This is bad news.
Rogue is like, wait for her. And as Colossus gets swatted through a wall.
Yes.
Like, did not wait for her at all.
They drop Doc Samson, and Rogue goes, forget the fancy talk and forget Doc Samson. I'm your meat. A real live mutant, okay? I'm your meat? What the hell?
Who do you think she is? Sean Stasiak from the late 90s in wrestling?
Obviously light editing on the Thomas's work here. And this is when we find out the Sentinels are not focused on mutants right now. Not interested.
I don't even know who Rogue is. They're like, oh, we don't know you.
They just want Gamma. Gamma, Gamma.
Yes. Second mutant female, no previous data, which honestly rude. But yeah, so Rogue touches Doc Samson to get like a strength power up, whams the Sentinel. Samson falls and Colossus comes back in. What?
I said it disappears. Rogue absorbs Gamma strength and also misogyny.
Colossus takes a fire blast for her. And the Sentinel's like, okay, while you two are on fire, I'm going to pick up Doc Samson and go. So off it goes. Ultra linear leap. That's what the portals are called. Still somewhat of an alliteration.
And they try to go after the Sentinel and just make a hole in the wall. Back at headquarters, they come back and Havoc's like, Rogue, Peter, what happened? You look like, and her response was, I got a mirror in my compact, Sugar. Like,
it's as busted up as I am, but it's still a mirror.
I know what I look like, bitch.
It's like when people say you look tired, like, thanks.
I got that last week, and then I took a mental health day the next day. Although it was worth it.
So they're trying to figure out, like, okay, they're after gamma rays. Something's going on here.
Also, appreciation for Colossus having most of his clothes burned off.
He will become steadily more undressed as these issues go on.
I'm not attracted to Colossus in his metal form. When he's in his human form, I find him hot, but I don't find him hot when he's metal.
Oh.
So they're reviewing everything because the Reavers left this fantastic headquarters with gigantic screens.
And we learn they have a danger room in the third mm-hmm. issue.
Yeah, woof though.
So they're talking about the Sentinels and the fact and
this,
that...
Yeah, this is where we get the history that I recounted earlier.
Yeah, so we can...
Where the Sentinels came from.
We can skip over all the Sentinel history. If you want more on the Sentinels, listen to Grey Malkin Lane.
I suppose the one piece of relevant information is Bolivar Trask, the creator of the Sentinel, his son Larry is the precog that wore the chalky amulet. Larry's guardian after his dad died is a federal judge named Robert Chalmers, and he's part of that Avengers story I mentioned as well. So that's relevant to our story in a minute.
So everything got basically buried. So in Australia, after the Avengers, it's like the anthill is what they call it, and that's where everything was left.
They treat it like a landfill from the 50s or 60s, like, oh, I don't know what's down here. We're just going to cover it up and fly away and call it a day.
Yeah. So they're like, okay, well, we know where the Sentinels were left, so let's go there. Storm is going to hang back and do the coordination piece.
Wait, yeah.
Like her gut tells her that she's got something. And then she reads a paper about solar flares and she's like, wait a minute.
That's the inkling feeling that I had, that we were missing something. And then we cut to the rest of the team at the anthill. There's a big hole, sir.
Yeah, they just go down. They're like, oh, well, let's journey down. Oh, there's Larry Trask's body. oh, who's this tied up woman? And it turns out that it's
Cynthia Chalmers.
Hate-filled okay. Cynthia Chalmers.
I got to mention one line of dialogue. When they're jumping in the anthill, Rogue says, "The upper level must be where the Sentinels stashed the Mark IIs they creamed outside." And Wolverine says, "And they sure did a world-class job at creaming. Nobody's going to put these hard-case Humpty Dumpties back together again." The word creaming is not a verb I ever need to see in a comic book ever again.
At least of a certain type.
Or at all, like, unless it is soft serve, we don't need creamin'. So
even then, I don't need that verb associated with ice cream.
So Cynthia Chalmers is there and tied up, and
she's like a random, like a random blonde lady that they've never heard of.
And she's super rude. Like, she's like, "What are you doing? Like, get me out of this." And they're like, "What are you doing here? Who are you?"
Like, it smells like dead bodies because everyone else has been dead for 2 days. She's been tied up that long, dehydrated.
And there's also a line from Havoc when they find Larry Trask's like desiccated skeleton. He goes, "The Avengers must have thought it fitting that his crushed body be left here for some reason." Like, there's just a note about the irresponsibility of the Avengers, this man's body in this hill.
That's a fair point. Like, what happens with when the Avengers like are done and there's corpses?
Damage control.
Back. Yes.
They might not have been founded.
But
yeah, then we go to Storm. She's at an observatory, which I feel like this might actually exist in the real world. There's some really powerful/prominent observatories for space things in Australia, which are super cool because space is super cool. So she goes in and there's cars in the lot, but there's no people around. And she's like, "Well, I'm not going to wait for someone to come find me and ask if I've been served yet. I will go forth and explore on my own." And she finds the tanks with Abomination and Doc Samson.
Yep, they're just in these glass tubes filled with gas because they've been sedated.
It's curious because
this is like such a superhero staple, like the unconscious superheroes in tubes.
Yes. And especially even in video games, like, oh, you walk past them when they're fine and then they release and now you have more baddies to fight. Or
the Sentinels attack, and this is the big revelation that number two is alive. Number two, I read as like a sassy drag queen. Every line of dialogue this character speaks is hilarious if you read it like with sass. She goes, like, he walks in and the other Sentinels are failing, and he goes, "It seems I was mistaken in believing the three of you could dispose of the intruder without my assistance." Like, if you read him sassy and he's just reading everyone for filth all the time, this is like a hilarious character.
So they adapt quickly to Storm's powers, and they
do recognize that the upper limits of her powers have not been reached yet, and she's like, "Darn tootin', they haven't."
And she's the one that saves the day in the end.
Yes.
Keep going. because that's where she gets slammed, and then she's on the ground, and that's how this part of the story ends, because the next, the title of the next story is Sterility Are Us.
Which is terrible. Can I read just a little more number two as he's fighting?
Yes, please.
Because he's mad at the Sentinels. "Thus, I must now take precious time from my other work to complete the mutant's capture." He's fighting Storm. "I must tell you, female, I would find your spirited defense worthy of further study had I not far more important matters to engage my intellect, such as the imminent approach of a solar flare." So, like, if you read him as just reading everyone all the time, I find this character hilarious. But yes, let's move on to Sterility Are Us. What do you think of this title?
Bad. I don't know. Again, I think it is because Roy Thomas is Roy Thomas, and they were like, "We just need this. Like, we need to throw this in with minimal editing because we're going to print."
Although out of the three stories, that first one was by far the best. The other two are less fun.
I do need to say, I love your evil monologuing voices, and I think I messaged you at some point when I was like, I saw this and I heard it in my mind as if it was you saying, giving your like,
I am so happy to be occupying that space again.
I need a good evil monologue. Who can that be? Chad.
So we open up back at the anthill. Cynthia Chalmers is being a bitch. Like, there's no other way around it. She is that annoying white woman in an 80s movie.
Well, granted, if you're tied up for 2 days and people come in and just stare at you and ask you questions and don't actually help you, like,
I read this as she was not tied up for 2 days. She like tied herself up before the X-Men arrived. This woman's lying about being terminally ill. She's also lying about being a virulent anti-mutant through this whole thing. So read her as like the daughter of the guy who built the Sentinels, right? Like she's a terrible person, but I see her like she just tied herself up before they walked in. That's how I read this.
So Psylocke takes time to read her mind, which is fun.
She's pissed.
Yeah. And they let her out and she's like, I'm thirsty. And Colossus breaks a pipe, which as someone who works in facilities, gross. Like, they're like, well, the Avengers never shut down the system, so they're still running. I'm like, what if that's coolant that you're just letting out? And she's like, drinking up right now.
And so, when you learn in Residence Life, when a water like fire thing breaks, that water sprinkler has been sitting there for possibly decades, and it's disgusting and rusty, and even if it's still relatively new,
well, not quite, they flush sprinkler systems once per year. I can attest to that, but
not at the college I worked at.
So Cynthia Chalmers, I feel like, is a pretty bad liar. Rogue, I think, is the bravest X-Men, but she's also kind of the dumbest. Like, she lacks common sense quite often. So Chalmers gives this story like, my dad was Robert Chalmers and he left me his shit, so I decided to come investigate, and then a sentinel tied me up. And then Rogue goes, hold it, Shilia, that's pretty innocuous story. If Rogue's not falling for it, you're a bad liar.
Yes.
Doesn't make any sense.
We cut to Psylocke seeing the backstory for Cynthia Chalmers. She is, you know, in the desert digging up stuff because she's an archaeologist.
In Mesopotamia.
Yes. And
she goes, so she wants to look at the Sentinel plans. She's just fascinated by them. So then upon that rejection, she goes back and steals them. And the dude is like, I know your reputation as a young prodigy among archaeologists, but our decision is final. Like, you're not digging up all these old sentinels that slayed themselves. So yeah,
She's obsessed with sentinels. Like, she sees her dad's plan. She looks at all of her trash shit. She's obsessed. Her dad's like, no, she sneaks into his house and like steals the plans. This woman is virulently anti-mutant once again.
Yeah, and even when she's all still tied up, she's like, hey, muties, let me go. Like, I would not be inclined to let her go.
Yeah.
So then there's this memory of the foreman being like, tie her up, we're going to take all this for ourselves. All these fancy robots are going to, whatever,
and
be our fortune.
And then a sentinel activates and is like, oh, I'm going to squeeze you to death.
The sound effect is crunch, crunch. Like, he just gets crushed in the Sentinel's hand. Oof.
He's crunched for the gods. Do all Sentinels monologue so much? There's
If it's a Roy Thomas story, they sure do.
Yeah, they do. That's what really surprised me about reading this. I'm like, how much dialogue he's putting in their mouths while these Sentinels talk.
Initial observation, prodding by late humans' petal extremity provided final impetus to self-rearranging process already nearing completion.
So the Sentinels are remembering how they destroyed Number Two for being a mutant, but now they're like, maybe we were a little hasty. And in one panel, they rebuild Sentinel Number Two, who then is now their sassy leader once again. And he has to deal with Cynthia Chalmers.
And their process has been consummated, which is self-repair really something that you can consummate? No, thank you. I don't know what's happening if that's what it is.
And then they're like, do we kill this bitch or not?
No, let's just go sterilize the planet again. That sounds more fun.
Yeah.
So it's the same plot from Avengers 102, 104. They're trying to sterilize the planet by having kidnapped the Abomination and Doc Samson to power the machine instead of a female mutant this time.
And there's a solar flare that is going to provide some extra juice for it. I do like this line of negative, we do not slay. then, do not slay humans unless they interfere with our anti-mutant directive. But still. Now with that voice of a sassy gay, that all makes so much more sense.
Rogue goes, wow, those Mark IIs are really sophisticated machines. If they could repro this number two from Slag Heap and a Cog, I just need Lenore Zan, like, always to read every Rogue line for me.
So yeah, Havoc is like, I'm the only one of you that has fought a Mark II. It is not fun. Do not recommend.
One theory we have on my show is Havoc and Larry Trask had a little fling. Larry Trask is the one that gave Havoc his code name and made his costume. I think there's a little queer love there.
Oh yeah, there is that line of like, he gave me this suit to control my powers and be able to direct them, and yeah, they take up the Sentinel plans that have been dropped by Ms. Chalmers, and she's like, no, I want them back. And they're like, no, we're going to take them because these machines are trying to kill us, so we need them more than you do. Also,
Havoc goes, they're going to sterilize the planet. We better be fast, or, and here's the quote, or people won't be spending any more money on baby carriages.
Yeah, like, it's such a, drawn in such a, like, we need this.
I will say that Havoc, the art for Havoc is not nailed in this issue. He looks super old, like 60 years old.
Everyone has very sharp cheekbones, I will say that. And also the, like, another Demanda Martini reference, like the dumb headpiece, those things on his head, I just don't like. And especially in this panel, the angle, you can tell how high up they are from the rest of his costume. It's just very bizarre.
So we jump back to the place where Storm is in New South Wales. And for some reason, the Abomination and Doc Samson are like in their little stasis tanks. Storm's also in a stasis tank, but she's like fully awake, like tapping on the glass, like looking around. Nobody really notices. And the Sentinels are starting to get the solar flares like up and running.
I never understood how you don't drown in one of those tanks without the mask. Or like, is that what the bubbles are for?
That's gas. They're not in liquid.
She's fully open mouthed in this tank.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Because I couldn't figure out how is she talking? How is she breathing?
That's just the effect that they have for like, there's gas in here, but there's gas in her tube and she's not asleep. So
yeah. And also there's five tubes, but they really only need
two. Maybe it's just some like essential oils that they're pumping in there. Like it's just lavender. Because now that we know that Mark II is a sassy gay, it's probably just like some aromatherapy that they.
Yes.
So solar flares are up and running. And then is.
I like how number two is like, I'm right, bitches. Like my plan is observation. My initial supposition in seeking out this observatory has been verified. Sequence of powerful solar flares has begun upon the Earth's sun.
And a minute later, he goes, soon there will be no more humans being born. It will take some decades for the race to become extinct. But what are decades to such as us? I love him.
Yes. Is this where they bring in the scientists?
Yep, this is where they bring in the scientists. So apparently some like Australian scientists had taken up in the anthill, which means they were working there with Larry Trask's corpse on the ground.
Well, this is the observatory. So
these are the astronomers.
Yeah.
The dialogue between Sentinels, I'm still having a moment on it, because one of them is like, this seems so indirect, like, why are we going in such a roundabout way? Another Sentinel is like, oh, forgive him, number five is being weird. And
so there's a, like, yeah, there's a scientist that's mad. He's yelling at number two, I won't shut up. This is a Royal Australian Observatory, not a hostel for overstuffed androids. If you're the King Kong in charge of this farce, I demand it you. And then number two bitch slaps him into the wall and breaks his neck.
Bitch slaps him into into Storm's tube, and there's just a blood smear on the glass, and she's like, oh, these fuckers are for real. Oh, they're out there murdering.
Joan Crawford as number two in Mommy Dearest.
It's, oh, yeah. Number two is like, nor have yours if you think the human concept of forgiveness is a part of our makeup. Like, he is still reading. He is still, like, very much a shut up fives a tennis talking. It's so good.
So this is where they take the rest of the astronomers and they're like, we need to experiment on these humans. So we're gonna look at their thresholds for radiation.
They put them in a terrarium.
And we're gonna
boil them to death.
Yeah, they radiate them to death. They're like, we need to see where's the sweet spot for radiation where they're like sterile but not dead.
I had a flashback to my stats class for, like, the first one died here, the last one died there, but it was at this point that they became sterile.
Storm is fully talking in her gas tank now, mouth open in the gas, as she yells, you murderers! And she goes, you treat human beings as if they were no more than guinea pigs. And number two says, analogy, you speak as a guinea pig would speak to human scientists if it could speak instead of merely squeal. Like, that's a wild thing for a Sentinel to say.
Yes. Yeah.
They do more evil monologuing, and then they start to prepare Doc Samson and Abomination for... They get strapped to the thing.
But first they have to remove the corpses.
Yes.
Oh, that's right. I thought Doc Samson and Abomination were the corpses. I'm like, no, one of them is green. That's not just shading. So off they go. Storm is taking advantage of the fact that this machine is loud. Good thing there's no neighbors around. And she breaks free because the dead astronomer cracked her tank.
The Sentinel says, number two, the mutant notice Storm has escaped. And number two says, clearly I am otherwise occupied. occupied. Obvious conclusion, it is your duty to recapture or destroy her.
It's like it's written as a poorly written Vulcan, which there's sadly too much of in Star Trek.
So she's summoning some rain. Doc Samson feels the rain on his skin.
Who is that? Natalie?
Imbruglia.
Yes.
Yes.
Doc Samson, your skin.
Yes. He has his unwritten moment. No, it's Natasha Bedingfield.
Oh, yep.
This is why you get us the points in the sound realm.
So he feels the rain on his skin and wakes up and he's like, wowzers.
I remember being in a lecture hall. How am I here? What a crazy happenstance.
A storm is about to get stomped.
So he goes to save her. But again, misogyny, his line is as he knocks the Sentinel over. Didn't you hear the lady, big fella? She said no. Oof.
So he like topples the Sentinel by lifting up from its foot.
They have enough time to like
have a conversation
and steady themselves, and then they have to start dodging again.
And Doc Samson's not in a big hurry until Storm tells him the Sentinels are planning to sterilize the planet, and he goes, no, we can't have that now, can we?
He's sort of giving Beast vibes.
Mm-hmm.
Abomination, who just does some rip. He's, oh no.
Keep going.
He's just tossing Sentinels left and right. And yeah, so much conversation as they're fighting to survive.
And do you think that they would just battle? Like, just maybe save the conversation until after the Sentinels?
Yeah. Another line of Doc Samson dialogue. These Sentinels mean to render everyone on Earth sterile. Don't know about you, but that gives me a real vested interest in stopping them.
Doc Samson, aren't you already sterile?
Maybe he's confusing sterile with, like, erect. Who knows?
Abomination makes a mini earthquake, which I don't think this is how earthquakes work, but a crevasse opens. He falls in with one of the Sentinels.
Whoa.
And the crevasse closes somehow.
And from this point forward, no one is really concerned. They're like, he did his job, though. So
this man is a Russian. And as he tosses the sentinel in, I can't do a Russian accent, but I just wanted someplace to file you under C for crevice. It's such a ridiculous line of dialogue.
And he's pretending to be Avalanche or Richter and like sealing this fault line. And yeah, Doc Samson is not concerned. They get blasted.
The X-Men arrive. Colossus goes, you Sentinels are going to be rendered unconscious. And Rogue goes, or whatever you do to live in robots.
I do like how number three is just so happy that number two is gone. Like, doesn't have to deal with the sass. And now three is in charge. Poor number 10 has to wait a long time if it's going to be in charge of anything.
Oh, it's like the apostles in the Mormon church. The oldest one dies, and then the next oldest one becomes the new president.
Wolverine goes forth. There's some lamenting over how fast these Sentinels are repairing themselves. So then just like, we just need to punch the fuck out of them. And they go.
Yeah, so Cynthia Chalmers and Psylocke are there, but she's like, Psylocke, why don't you do something? Like, aren't you a superhero? And she's like, that's not how my powers work, bitch. I will have a part to play. And she's like, well, it better be soon, because those Sentinels are beating the asses. And
Havoc jumps through the wall, and Cynthia Chalmers goes, more mutant fodder.
Ooh.
Honestly,
yes.
Her dialogue is just full of red flags. Doc Samson continues to give Beast vibes. Good gravy. This one's regenerating. As soon as you cut his leg, I'm like, good gravy is more Beast than anything. I feel it's like two steps down from Stars and Garters.
So we figure out why Psylocke was holding back. It's because she was masking Havoc's energy buildup. So he does a big old blast. And
then he says, hi, my name's Alex Summers, or Havoc if you have a taste for melodrama.
I know what just happened here. Let me explain it to you in every detail.
And then this is where we continue over. The X-Men are also not concerned that Abomination is sealed up in a crack in the earth. And Havoc's like, he did his job. He did it well. Good job, Abomination.
Yeah. Came through when the chips were down. And they just...
This is also the era when the X-Men were dead to cameras. Nobody knows they're alive, right? Roma's spell. Yeah. So as they're leaving through their little portal, you know, Cynthia's like, bye, and don't worry, I'll keep your secret. Nobody will learn from me. The X-Men are alive and well, a condition I intend to remedy at my earliest convenience. Like, she suddenly goes Yzma in the Emperor's New Groove.
Psylocke, I feel like, should be more prepared for this, or like should have noticed any of this in her psi scans, but didn't, and didn't even bother. Like, I know there's some ethical things about like wiping someone's memory, but you'd think they would at least have a conversation about it. Like, don't we need to be concerned that someone knows?
Yes, I like did not do her job here.
And this is where things end for this story, right?
Well, Abomination pops back out of the ground.
Because Abomination pops up. It's okay, everyone. That big crack in the earth did nothing to him. He drags a sentinel head with him.
Cynthia Chalmers, I think, is lying here. She convinces the Abomination to have sympathy for her because she's dying of cancer and she like needs his help to like put this machine back together. But really, she wants to sterilize the planet. So I don't think she's actually terminally ill.
She still has some of the plans. The X-Men didn't grab all of them. And he's like, oh, we're going to do crime things? Great, love it.
And they shake on it. And this leads us into the last part of the story, which is X marks the Sentinel.
So Cynthia Chalmers and Abomination become the CEOs of the new corporation, Sterility R Us, in the Australian.
What's their mascot, if not a giraffe?
So this third part is written by...
Michael Higgins.
I've run across him in other things, I feel, from Marvel and 90s stuff somewhere. It's a tickle in the back of my brain. I don't know from where. But anyway.
Abomination is building the Sentinel, screwing the head back on, like.
I think really quickly, I think the cover on this one is Eric Larson or I think it's Eric Larson.
It's Eric Larson, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I like this cover a lot.
Yeah.
It's Iron Man and Namor.
It's putting everyone that's included in the issue in the same group shot, which is fun. Gone are the bubbles where you're seeing like Love Boat featured, like the portholes. Like these are the characters you'll see.
We just get people charging forth. Namor, Storm, Colossus, Wolverine, Rogue, Psylocke, Iron Man, and Havoc.
Then Abomination, Cynthia Chalmers, piecing together a Sentinel with no number on it, sadly.
They made him super buff looking, but also super disgruntled. Like, that head is not happy about being screwed onto a body.
This will be the greatest achievement of my lifetime. The world will ever remember the name of Cynthia Chalmers. They will not.
No. Spoilers, they won't.
Abomination says, if you're achieving so much, how come I'm doing all the work? Oh, really, Emo?
He's like, I liked you better when you called me Abomination.
You were merely the muscle. And then she's like, but no matter, you cannot have forgotten that I am dying.
Like, she suddenly is like,
it's very Greek, like, my only desire is to achieve a sort of immortality by doing this great feat of ridding the world of mutants.
Even in my death, my dreams will be realized at last.
Blech.
And so she hooks herself up to like the headpiece to download information into this rebuilt Sentinel.
So I won't go deep on this, but I have a theory and I want to write this story that there's the ability to upload a human mind into Sentinel form. The original Master Mold and Number Two both have like very distinct personalities. And here we have a literal image of Cynthia Chalmers uploading her mind into a Sentinel. And it's not the experience she was hoping for, but you can power up a Sentinel with a mind. And that's exactly what she's done here.
Yeah, the eyes start glowing and she gives out an arg. And the Sentinel's having some feelings. Observation, confusion, reaction, and impossibility. And it's just like, peace out.
It blasts through the roof.
Conclusion, clear new programming, reinitiate plan for sterilization of mankind.
This next section makes no sense to me. The X-Men have built a danger room in the Australian outback. I don't think this is a part of the Claremont stories.
No.
Like, all of them are able to use their powers, including Psylocke, on these, like, creatures with like psychic blasts. I don't know, like the Shi'ar like built them a little chamber. This is a weird thing.
It's an upgraded danger room because Logan can smell everything, which
it has scentoscope.
I don't want that. Oh, smell-o-vision.
Yes.
The John Waters dream. And yeah, the butterfly blasts.
So really this is just filler. They needed to stretch out the story to be a bit longer in this issue, so they included some Danger Room stuff.
And this line from Rogue, I just love the way these critters squeal when I suck the vitality from their little bodies. Rogue, how do you not make that sound like a villain line?
How do you not make that sound sexual?
Like, sucking. But also villainous. Like, I just love draining the life force out of someone. Who are you, Celine? Like, I have feelings.
So, Danger Room, that's all that people need to really know. But then there are some readings. And
the solar flares are picking up and the Sentinel's on her way back.
Yes.
And the Sentinel, surprise, shows up in their headquarters.
Yeah. Ooh, Colossus has like a more of a gym pump. And the Sentinel is after Rogue in particular. Subject Rogue will spare herself considerable discomfort by willingly accompanying the Sentinel. Also, like, third person, never good.
Was Cynthia Chalmers just trying to get a date with Rogue the whole time? Like, if I attack you,
perhaps.
Maybe. So they try to defeat the Sentinel. It's not really going great. So they're doing another thing. Havoc will do his buildup of power while the others distract it. Classes.
This Sentinel has a healing factor.
Yeah. Just thrams Colossus into Havoc, disrupting the whole thing. And Betsy tries her Butterfly Blast on the Sentinel. And there's another Yarg. And thank you, Daryl, for pointing out that it's Honey Chile and not Honey Chili. I was so confused. I'm like, what is Honey Chili? And why is that an expression that's being used?
Honey Chile. So a portal opens. The Sentinel has cakes. And because we see the backside of it as it grabs Rogue and
does its ultra linear leap. And
I feel like we just have to emphasize this one line of dialogue very quickly. Psylocke gets hit and Rogue yells, "Honey Child, are you all right?" That's the weirdest thing I've ever seen Rogue say in a panel. Honey Child? Okay, please proceed.
Could be worse. Could be Honey Chili.
Psylocke not doing well.
Worse than Havoc.
Yeah, and she's fading. So,
the X-Men rush her to the hospital, and Wolverine goes, "There's the smell of death in the air."
Yeah, and they get to, it's got to be Cynthia with the tubing that's there. Abomination wakes up.
And he's like, "What? Again, I'm trapped." And Rogue is there too.
I didn't like it the first time. And yeah, so much monologuing by the Sentinel. Timing must coincide. Observation.
He's going to sterilize the planet by using Rogue. Since he lost Doc Samson, he's now got Rogue powered into Gamma alongside Abomination. They're both captured and they're now powering up the machine, which like fires through a satellite into the sun and will sterilize the planet unless stopped.
Very evil scientist.
There's a fun satellite. There's the cool 90s cosmic art that you like so much.
Yeah.
And at long last, the prime directive of every Sentinel ever created will be achieved. That Sentinel's enjoying its life.
He's singing, "I had a dream."
We're in the hospital wing.
Of the evil base. Since Cynthia's there, Psylocke is there, and they are both not doing great.
Yeah, maybe they should like read into the massive amount of cabling coming off of Cynthia and be like, maybe we should disconnect.
So Havoc is at the computers.
That's an awful picture of Havoc.
Yes, like, it is.
Like the fate and like still the little ribbons on top of his face with this little brooch on his forehead. It's very brooch-like. Like there's the main gem and there's all the little gems all around it. And they're just trying to figure out what's happening. So off they go, storming the tube room, which is now my main word for the evil scientist lair.
They realize the gamma rays are powering the solar flares, and Storm, if you guys have been watching X-Men 97, Storm gets like her like moment, "Desert winds, heed my command." Like this is a great Storm scene.
Yes. Which also, wouldn't the Earth's magnetic field deflect the gamma radiation? I feel like it does that with highly charged particles anyway.
That's actual science. I don't know why you're trying to apply that to an X-Men story.
So when the Sentinel's like, "I've already won," which really means that you haven't, if you have to say that out loud.
That means we're going into the final battle sequence, is what that means.
Keep going.
And Havoc is like, "Something's wrong. She's dead."
So all of Cynthia Chalmers has been drained into the Sentinel.
Yeah, it's
Abomination says, "Holy spit!"
Is the Sentinel doing this?
Holy spit!
And no, it's just Storm who's being superpowered, creating a sort of elemental cosmic turbulence. So even as the solar radiation approaches the Earth, Storm's little greenhouse effect, will stop any of the harmful rays from penetrating into the Earth's atmosphere. The double irony here is that this is a shield that will protect the Earth rather than aid in its eventual destruction. Storm is tapped out.
Understandably, after creating a greenhouse effect for the entire planet.
That's a lot.
And
Wolverine's like, the others are doing fine. And Havoc's like, no, they're not. Psylocke has recovered.
Oh, good for her.
Unclear how.
Reasons. And she's like, no. Cynthia Chalmers is dead. No one is sad? Like...
No, Colossus is saying that she's dead. And Psylocke is like, no, she isn't.
So again, I want to write this story, but I mentioned how you can upload a human mind into a Sentinel. In the early Silver Age X-Men comics, Professor X has multiple scenes where he can make mental contact with the Sentinels, like track them, feel them coming. And here we have Psylocke interfacing with a Sentinel and reading one piece. I detected something different about this Sentinel in our battle earlier. I was able to make mental contact with it, with what I believe might be a sort of collective consciousness imparted on its intellect circuits by its many creators. This idea of like human consciousness in Sentinel form is fascinating to me.
It's, yeah.
So what I will stand by it. My statement that Cynthia Chalmers is dead, except for her mind, which is in the Sentinel. So her body is just like laying there, I guess. Which
do you remember? Do you remember when Stephen Lang uploaded his mind into Master Mold?
No.
Stephen Lang's the guy from like the first Claremont Sentinels story. He's the super like virulently anti-racist, and he uploads his mind into Master Mold, and there's like 6 or 7 years worth of comics where there's like a Master Mold stomping around with the mind of Stephen Lang in it.
Oh, that name is familiar. Cause I'm like, oh, Lang, isn't that one of the Ant-Men? And
not Lang, different character.
It was, yes. And then I had the realization that it was someone new. So yeah, I read that at some point from early on. But yeah, the whole it's very strange. The mental powers working with robots. I agree.
So we get Cynthia Sentinel, Chalmers, everything my life has stood for, all of my desires, it's all been corrupted. Everything my life has become is abhorrent to me. Not only am I unhappy with the loss of my humanity, I am uncertain of my ability to control what I've become.
It's so, there's choices being made, like with life being in quotes, like, I feel like you use that when you're like, my life before was just a dream. But if she's lamenting that she no longer has that, why are you putting it in air quotes? And she doesn't have control over anything, but she knows that she's unhappy. Like,
and in the end, she flies into the sun. But
yes,
she is in the body of number two, who literally in like the last storyline was like, I'm going to fly into the sun. Goodbye, everyone. Right? It's like the ultimate cover. So she is in number two's body, like repeating the same thing. She lied to them about this. She didn't commit suicide. This character, this human mind and a Sentinel is just out there floating in the Marvel universe waiting to be used.
So, and that's the end of the story. Cynthia Chalmers is your character. Why?
I love an obscure character. So when I'm covering content for my show, all my Patreon episodes are all about like individual, it's, you know, Sentinels like Griffin and Tri-Sentinel. So there's a number of these characters I could have covered in that format. But this character had three appearances. It's a unique X-Men character that a lot of people don't know about. And it's a Sentinel story. So it was an easy ping on all three of those levels.
And what a way to go out.
Yeah. I'm flying into the sun to get more powers. That's what she's doing.
It is it's art. Like the four-stage progression of her flying off into the sun. Also, sorry, Nick was chewing at some cardboard at the gate.
If anyone could have heard that.
Our usual bun noise disclaimer applies to this episode as well.
So I have a lot of thoughts about the like Trask origin story as well. I would love to go back and write early content, but the Trask's best friends are the Chalmers, and like all of them just have shit children who hate mutants. Even Madame Sanctity is like a shit. She's a shit character in a lot of ways, right? So Cynthia's like anti-mutant like crusade here. She's still out there, and it connects to the other bigger Sentinel stories. This could be a big character.
And I mean, we don't get the X-Men reaction really beyond this. Like, the Sentinel blasts off and they're like, okay. So this exists in a little specific blip in the X-Men chronology that's never referenced again. It's just, it is a one-off story that they had. It was an Outback adventure, and that was it.
It's not top quality, but it's a good story. I like this little three-parter. I think it's fun as an X-Men fan.
Yeah. And it's unexpected. You wouldn't expect an Outback story like this when it was published. So it's giving a really cherished time of their history a little bit more shine. You get one more story from this period. So it's fun to be able to revisit that and see.
Which is a lot of people's very favorites. And there's some great moments for Havoc, Rogue, and Storm in particular.
Yes.
Oh. The only part I remember is the weird long shot love triangle with Rogue and Dazzler.
Mm-hmm.
And Rogue has had some roller skates. She's dressing up like Dazzler. That was a thing. But
all right.
It's a good era.
So any last thoughts on Cynthia Chalmers?
I think I've said everything there is to be said, but yeah. I'm so happy to have had this conversation with you guys.
We have devoted the most airtime possibly ever to the character of Cynthia Chalmers now. So we have that going for us. Chad, how are you rounding out? This is coming out in just a few days. What does the end of Sentinel Month hold for us?
Yeah, so the next three episodes coming out on my show are covering Avengers 102, 103, 104, all with different ensembles of professional guests. And then we've got stuff like the Tri-Sentinel and a few of the others on the Patreon channel. So we're just having a good time. And sorry for all the tensions and thoughts, but I loved our conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for joining us, everyone. Check out Graham Alkin Lane for all your content going through the early 70s throughout the year. We're going to have some nice chats about fascism later in the year. I can't wait, because you're digging into like Captain America, deep, dark stuff from the 70s.
And Baby Magneto's coming up.
Baby Magneto. anything else you want to plug?
No, yeah. I'm great. Thank you, guys. This was a huge honor. I had a great time.
Yeah, thanks for listening, everyone, and we will catch you next time on the X Factor Files podcast.